This is Kenzumi Goddess Award-winning Gray Dietrich, and you're listening to Building the Game.
Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, November 17th, 2014, and you're listening to episode 129. My name is Robs, and there is Jason. Howdy.
Hey.
Howdy ho.
Wonder if you sound different now.
Hey there, hi there. What?
Wonder if you sound different with the new recording setup we have again.
Oh, yeah. We're trying. This is our fourth computer and our fourth piece of software that we're trying to record. Now we're on your Mac using GarageBand.
Yep. And it's a almost brand new Mac.
Yeah.
With the newest version of GarageBand. So fingers crossed.
Give us 6 months and see if that one falls apart too.
Right. So,
yeah. Maybe we should just start recording on our iPhones. You know, like, I'll hold mine up to my mouth and you hold yours up to your mouth, and then I'll just have to stitch them together.
Nice. That's a great idea.
Yeah, no.
I've always wanted, they got this thing I saw at Guitar Center where, like, you can hook it to your iPad and plug it in the port, and then it, like, puts mic jacks right on it. I've always wished we could just do that, because I have an iPad, but I have to pry it out of my wife's hands.
Yeah, well, but that's no different than our handheld thing, honestly. And so, we need the big deal. We could just use our handheld recorder all the time, but it's when we want to have a third guest that
headphones.
Or headphones. Well, that's nice.
And headphones really they're nice.
Like, oh, boy, are they.
I like, especially now that we're here, not at your place, so like it's not so hot in the summer.
Yeah.
Like,
because
then the headphones are bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah. So, anyways.
Jinx.
Gosh, we've been together too long here. Good times. Let's talk about stuff.
How's it going? What's new?
Not a lot.
Oh, hey, how's Halloween? Because this is the first time we've recorded since Halloween. How was your Halloween?
It was good. I didn't dress up as anything.
No.
I went out on Halloween, went to exactly 5 houses. After 3 houses, my son said, I'm cold.
It was a cold night.
It was pretty bad, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we went to 2 more houses and then we came home.
Yeah.
So the night before that, we went to a trunk or treat at a school that our church does. And that was pretty awesome because like it was indoors.
Yeah.
And there's just like big lines of people and you just walk back and forth through the lines. Took like 10 minutes and it was like going to like 30 houses.
Oh, wow. So he loved that, didn't he?
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, and like it was people he knew. So like and lots of kids. Yeah. It was really bright in there so you can see costumes and stuff. So.
That's good. What was his costume?
He was Sully from Monsters, Inc.
Oh, I think you told me about that.
Yeah, and then Laurel was Boo.
Boo.
The little kid. And the costume stuff my wife made for her for Boo was pretty awesome. We got her this purple jacket. It's all puffy.
Yeah.
And then we just hooked teeth, little cardboard teeth onto it, and then a mop head off the top. I mean, and then little eye stalks with things. I mean, it was like everyone that saw her that knew what Monsters, Inc. was like...
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, she's Boo. Like, that's so awesome.
That's
so
cool.
That was cool, yeah.
Good.
And she didn't care. She sat in her car seat the whole time.
Yeah, so. No difference to her. She doesn't care what she's wearing.
I'm wearing this puppy coat. It's cool. I'm warm.
Right on.
And we did not take her out on Halloween because
it was
just too cold.
It was like 20 degrees.
Yeah. Our friends Roe and Will came over, and so they manned the house while we ran out and did that.
That's
so
good.
But you went to a party, right?
I went to a party.
Yeah.
I was Mugatu.
And I heard people actually recognized
people
you.
People knew who I was. Yeah.
It's impressive. And according to our friend Andy Lennox, everyone knows who Mugatu is. That's what he said to me.
Yeah.
Today. So.
Everyone knows who Mugatu is. I mean, everyone who is between the ages of 25 and 35 knows who Mugatu is.
That's probably a good range for that.
I think so. I think it's a fair estimate.
Right.
I think it's a fair estimate. That was fun. I'm very pleased with my costume. I tweeted a picture of that.
Mm-hmm.
So listeners who might follow me on Twitter might have noticed that. I don't know if they did or not. Don't really care. I don't know where I was going.
I know
that
when I first saw pictures of you, I didn't recognize you.
Yeah, well, I shaved.
Yeah.
Yeah, because normally I have facial hair, and I shaved that off, which I hate. Oh, man, I hate shaving.
Yeah, I've told you multiple times, you look really stupid.
God,
right now.
I hate it. I hate it. I hate shaving my face because it's awful, and I look like I'm 3 years old. I basically look like your daughter when I shave.
Pretty much.
Right. And then I have to suffer through the weeks of trying to grow it back.
Right.
Which is even worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I'm a little bummed speaking of facial hair because mm-hmm. I was going to do the No Shave November thing this month because
mm-hmm.
I've done that in the last couple of years, but I forgot to shave on Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
So because so you kind of have to like start at a deficit. Like I would have shaved it super close and I didn't. So and then we're going to this conference for work next week.
Right.
So
yeah.
I'm like, hey, I don't want to look like a scrub there. So I'm going to shave tonight.
Yeah, that's I if I don't have something respectable by the time we leave, I might have to shave again so I don't look like a complete slob.
Oh, that'd be a shame.
Which would just put me back another 2.5 weeks, you know?
You'll probably be fine.
I hope so.
Shave really good on the rest of your face, and then it should be all right.
I hope so, man. So. I hope so. Yeah, so wait, so no shave November, which I... So
I honestly don't even know what it's for. I just like the sound of it.
The idea is for charity. Right, you're supposed to shave in the beginning of the month, and then people are supposed to bid on your beard. And I'm not exactly sure how that's supposed to work.
I would be bad for that because, like, I mean, everybody's used to me having a beard, so
yeah. But I don't know how it works. Whatever, I don't know how a lot of that stuff works. But a bunch of people just said, "Hey, that's funny. It's an excuse not to shave, and it's a thing." And so I'm also not going to shave in November, and so it's not about charity and giving money.
Okay.
It's you know, they kind of kill the whole point of it, which is why I hate all that ice bucket nonsense, because it was supposed to be for charity and most people just were stupid.
Yeah, but if you did it and donated, it's cool.
Well, that's fine, so, but most people did not.
Right, that's true.
Most people did not.
That's true. So anyway, I just like the sound of it, and it's an excuse. Now, it used to be an excuse to like not shave. My wife would be like,
Yeah, but now you have a beard all the time.
Now I have a beard all the time, so it doesn't matter. Now she's just used to it. Though if I didn't shave for the whole month, by the end of the month, she'd be like, you need to shave.
Yeah.
Because they keep it pretty trimmed, so it's kind of long right now, but normally it's thinner than this.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I haven't really been playing anything lately.
No?
Right before you came over, I played Lucky Ducks with my son, but that was it.
Okay.
Oh, I could talk a little bit about Dice Master. So, I was showing you the new Dice Master set came out, which is Uncanny X-Men.
Yeah.
Which kind of feels like a redo because the last one was Avengers versus X-Men.
Already a lot of X-Men in there.
I thought that was kind of a... I don't know. I was a little let down that was the next set they did. I just thought it was kind of lame.
I think we talked about it a little bit before.
But there's a lot of good pieces in it. They have an Ant-Man. Ant-Man's in it. He's not an X-Men. He's just Ant-Man.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of characters in the first set that were neither Avengers nor X-Men.
Right. And that's kind of the point. There's a lot more villains in this one. And then they're doing what they do in Magic now, where like the new set introduces a new prime mechanic that's going to be like something you're going to use a lot of.
Uh-huh.
It's called pairing in this one. So like when you bring certain characters in, you can pair them with another character.
Okay.
And they are paired until the start of your next turn. So they're paired basically for this turn and then also for your opponent's turn.
Okay.
And when they're paired, they have a special ability that they're generating while they're paired.
Hmm.
So my assumption is if you played like a pair deck, I guess is what you'd call it, which sounds really stupid. Maybe a pairing deck. Sounds even dumber.
Pairing.
Like a pairing knife, but it's a deck.
Pair. Yeah. So let's more sounds in the microphone. Huh?
Pair.
Pairing. Pairing.
All right.
Go on.
So anyways, my assumption is you get a couple of those guys out, right? And you start pairing them together and then like you're chaining effects. But it just didn't really strike me as super cool.
Okay.
The dice look a lot better this time. I showed you a few.
Yeah, they look good.
Even the artwork on the cards, I think, looks a little nicer this time around.
Okay.
And it's interesting because they re-released some of the same characters.
Mm-hmm. With different abilities and different dice.
Yeah. And I believe you can't play the same one twice. Like, I couldn't play two versions of Magneto, even if it was different dice. I don't think.
Oh, probably tournament rules.
Right. I kind of hope you can't, because it's kind of lame to me if you can. But anyways, And they're still kind of sticking with the same thing, like Wolverine's in it again, because he's Wolverine and he makes money.
He needs to be in every set.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's necessary. But anyways, his ability is like his previous abilities from the last set.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of cool.
Mm.
It is what it is. I think the best piece I've seen so far is Shadowcat. She can make it so somebody can't attack, which is pretty cool.
I don't even know who Shadowcat is.
Kitty Pryde?
Oh, I know who Kitty Pryde is. She becomes Shadowcat at some point.
Is that her?
I don't know, dude.
I thought that was her.
I don't know a lot of Marvel, So, I mean, I know like the core, the popular main people, but I don't know a lot of the side stuff.
I want to know.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing I would comment on that they did a good job with was, remember basic action cards?
Yeah.
And you were like, basic action cards are going to be really cool. And I was like, well, I see two basic action cards that are awesome.
Yeah.
And the rest are just kind of like, ma.
Yeah.
Now it's a tough decision. Now they've released more basic action cards.
Okay.
Because the ones with the globals are super powerful,
mm-hmm.
and they have two more with really good globals, and you're only allowed to bring two. And yeah. like, that's tough, because that means I have to choose between three that are good, because I used one that was really good and one that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. But let me see here. I swear she's Shadow Cat.
I don't know. You know what? Could be.
I mean, half the time on this podcast, right? No, Kitty Pryde. It just says Kitty Pryde. I thought... Ah, yes. Kitty Pryde. Shadow Cat.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, I swear that that's her thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. And the other card that I thought was kind of broken, sounds kind of cool. He costs five, but five's not terribly expensive.
Yeah.
It's Magneto Will to Live. If Magneto leaves the field, he goes to the prep area instead of the used pile or dice bag. So basically, if I attack and damage you for six damage,
ooh.
Instead of him going to my dice bag, he just goes back to my prep area.
Nice.
Which is pretty insane.
Yeah.
So especially if you could get three of those dice out there.
Yeah, so he's never going to go away.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
So
that's crazy.
Now, I think, though, because there's that Loki Gemkeeper one that says you can't field someone. so I think you could totally host someone by...
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, if you didn't roll him, he would also leave the field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he didn't roll him, he'd never get back in the field. I'm going to just crinkle the bag right here. Crinkle bags.
Just...
Crinkling bags.
Hey, it's reality. It's reality programming.
Reality
guys.
Programming. Crinkle
including
bags.
Crinkling bags and bumping tables.
All right.
And shaking
microphones
and popping the mics. Popping the mics.
So anyways, have you been playing anything?
I feel kind of bad about this. I tried to play Rivals for Catan for the third time.
Rivals for Catan? I've never heard of that one.
It's a two-player Catan card game.
Okay.
My wife bought it for me for Christmas last year.
Uh-huh.
We have tried to play it three times now, and we haven't made it past... Well, we haven't finished the rules, because the game setup is so complicated.
Oh, wow, that stinks.
And the rules are written... Like, let's say the first step is sort these four decks based on card backs. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty simple thing, right? The rules will take a whole page to explain that concept. and so just reading through this stuff is just maddening. Maddening. It's so frustrating. And by the time you get to the end of that page and you realize what it was asking you to do, you just go... I feel like I just played a game trying to figure out these rules.
That's terrible.
I mean, that's how much energy I had to use for my brain to get through that. And so by the time I get halfway through the rule book, I'm just frustrated with the game already. I haven't even started playing it.
Yeah, that's pretty terrible.
This is the third time we've tried to do this, and I feel really rotten about it, because I'm sure it's a fun game, and my wife bought it for me as a gift, and because we both liked Catan when we played it with you, and we like two-player card games. And I feel like if we could get through the rule book, we'd probably enjoy it, but I don't know, man. I don't know. And the game comes with like three different scenario decks, and so like when it's explaining you game setup, it'll explain game setup for each of the three different scenario decks. So you know, if the scenario one, the suggestion is sort these four decks by a card back, then that takes a full page. It takes another half page to say, if you're playing scenario number two, shuffle these two together and these two together. But again, it takes half page to say that.
Right.
I mean, it's just blah.
Germans, man.
Yeah. So that's driving me crazy.
It's too bad. I really am a fan of Catan the dice game. It's pretty simple to play. There's not a lot of tough decisions.
Yeah.
But it's fun. Like, mm-hmm. and there's no setup. Like, you pull out the piece of paper, because you draw on the piece of paper, actually.
Yeah.
You each have a piece of paper, and you roll some dice, and you make some decisions. I think it's super fun, because it's just so simple.
Yeah.
And it's two players. Like, mm-hmm. So my wife and I just play it sometimes for the heck of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The other thing about this game is that it takes up a lot of space on your table.
Which is a card game that's annoying.
It's like we're lining up these cards, and you got to organize them in a very specific structure on the table, and you can lay it out in a certain way, and this card goes there, and that card goes there. And so, I mean, by the time we're playing it, or by the time we're done setting it up, not even done setting it up, because we still haven't even finished that, it's filled up our entire play surface, and there's no place for us to actually
play
cards.
That's lame.
So it's just so frustrating.
Well, at least you tried twice. Now you can probably.
I've tried three times now.
Three times?
Yeah.
Should try and trade it with someone on BGG.
Yeah. It was a
gift. Who wants Rivals for Catan? Yeah, but your wife clearly doesn't want to play it either, since she doesn't seem to like it.
She doesn't get frustrated about setup as quickly as I do. That's why it took us three tries also before we managed to play Civ, the board game.
Yeah, but that.
We, in the end, decided we hated that and never want to play it again.
It's too much.
It's just too crazy. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
That's about it, I guess. I don't know. Well, I started playing Dragon Age Origins.
Yeah, you said you really like that.
Oh, man, dude. Well, the first 4 hours is pretty sweet. Then I think I'm about 8 or 9 hours into it now, and it's kind of getting annoying.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. It's just one of those video game things, you know, where you go and like, I just want to go through the dungeon. Okay, maybe the dungeon is a tower, but whatever. I want to go room to room, and I want to kill some bad guys, and then I want to get to the end, I want to fight the boss, and then I'll move on. That's how video games are structured, right?
Right.
But it does that thing where, you know, you get through the dungeon, and then you're about to go fight the boss, and it goes, uh-oh, something got in the way. The demon possessed you, and you go to this weird shadow realm. And then I have to go to this shadow realm place called the Fade, and then I can sometimes turn into a mouse. And other times I can turn into a guy that's on fire, and then I can also turn into a demon. And mice can go through holes in the ground.
Oh.
And the demon can see secret doors, and the burning guy can walk through fire. And I get to the next demon that I have to kill. Oh, but that's not the demon, even though it's just...
Yeah, that's lame.
Let me play the game, guys. Let me play the game. Don't either be a puzzle game, be a social role-playing game, or be a hack-and-slash game. Don't try and be everything, because it's just annoying.
Sometimes, like, those games, there's a name for that, but, like, where you, I'm sure some listener will tell us, but where, like, you, it's an open world, but, like, when you go back to certain places with new abilities, you can do different things.
Yeah.
And I sometimes like that, but when that's done well, but when it's not done well, it just makes you want to set stuff on fire.
I like that for a new game plus kind of idea, where, you know, you on level one, and stage one, level one, whatever, you know, say Mario 1-1. Let's say there's a door in Mario 1-1 that you can't get through until you beat the game once. And then after you beat the game, you go back, and you can, now if you want to play the game through again, you can do that. But don't force me when I get to the end of Mario to start all over again, because I have to start using through those doors. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And maybe...
Well, because then it's like you didn't finish the game.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's annoying, yeah.
And that's, in the end, what frustrated me about Fez, because I was enjoying Fez a lot. And I was getting really excited about it, and then the game ended, and I was like, oh, I feel like I only finished, like, a half of the game. And then, yeah, guess what? I only actually finished half the game. And it wanted me to start all over again.
But now I have more.
I just give me more content.
Like, not don't give me a rehash of the same content with special abilities.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little let down. And I was talking to our coworker Trevor, who also played Dragon Age, and he said, yeah, if you're not enjoying this part, it gets worse from there. So,
well, at least you had somebody to tell you that.
Yeah, right. So I don't know. I mean, I paid for it. I paid $20 for it. So I'll keep going.
You paid $20. You played for 8 hours. You got your money out of it.
I did, but, you know, I want to
finish
it. It's
like less than $2 an hour.
I'd like to finish it if I can, but we'll see. I think I'm only like a quarter of the way through the game.
Oh, dude,
it's a big game.
If you feel like you're if you feel like you're already burned out and you're a quarter of the way through, you got your money's worth. Maybe stop.
And it's got really crappy combat tutorials. Like, I think I was about 6 hours into the game before I realized that I could use a bow and arrow, because it didn't tell me how to do that. I don't know. Whatever. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but...
All right.
Anyway, yeah. So, Dragon Age.
Hey, let's talk about a topic. You're going to read an email from our buddy Andy Lennox.
Andy sent us an email.
That email is going to spurn our topic that we're going to talk about today.
Right. So, well, let's see.
Rob's going to read it.
I am. I need to pull it back up here, and I need to read it, and then I need to read a couple tweets that he sent to follow up with it.
Okay.
Where is that? Okay. Andy says, "Hey guys, a little comment for the show since I saw Rob asking for questions on Twitter. I recently had a chance to catch up in the last three episodes, epic amounts of yard work, and I noticed something a little strange. Rob introduced a brilliant idea for a time-based mechanic where one player had to complete a puzzle. The time it took this player to complete the puzzle would determine the amount of time the other player has to do a specific task, like an asymmetric race of wits or something. Love the idea. There's so many neat things you could do with it. It really got my creative juices flowing, and I was thinking that you guys were going to really come up with something worth pursuing for your Game Crafter contest entry. Then something happened that really disappointed me. Jason said the idea was, quote, too ambitious, end quote, and shut down that whole train of thought. I completely understand where he was coming from. The idea you had going would have required lots of bits and would, in the end, more than likely be an expensive game. But I think it was entirely too premature to kill the idea. I've noticed, too, that Jason is viewing a lot of... he's just laying it on for you.
I probably earned this from Andy.
You did, okay. Yeah. I've noticed, too, that Jason is viewing a lot of the feasibility of his designs through the lens of a publisher's pocketbook. How can we keep this game to 54 cards or less? How can we eliminate more bits? I think this is a big mistake. Especially when you're so early in the idea phase of a design. The right question to ask isn't, how much is this going to cost before you have a playable game? The right question is, would this be fun, and how can I make minimum viable prototype? The value of early brainstorming and prototyping is that we don't have any cost restriction on just thinking of something incredible and playing with it. Later in development, minimizing components is a very important endeavor. Once you already have something fun on your hands. When you run across an ambitious idea that you like, you should not ask, why is this impossible? But instead, how can we make this possible? Your show is at its best when you guys are coming up with pie-in-the-sky ideas that are outside the norm for existing tabletop games. To the value of your show, to me, is that you guys are really great at this early brainstorming phase, and listening to the show gets me to brainstorm my own ideas. Please don't kill your ideas before they deserve to die. And then he followed up with a couple of tweets. Don't make games for the masses. Make them for you. Human sacrifice is an awesome theme. Make that game. And then he said, that tweet with no context sounds a bit crazy, though.
He did.
Which was funny.
And he also, a side note to me, when him and I were talking on GChat today, because I was like, wow, man, sick burn with that email. Yeah. He's like, I wasn't trying to. And I was like, no. He was totally, totally not.
Yep.
Like, he was not out of school at all. He was being completely polite. That's Andy and I's relationship.
Yep.
And he was just telling us what he thought was some valid points about things I've been doing wrong. And first of all, so two things. I want to say that he said to me as well, he said, and I quote, I'll be really sad if Rob doesn't pursue that human sacrifice game. That game needs to be made.
Cool.
So know that he believes that.
All right.
And two, like, him and I were just talking, and it really kind of made me sad. I mean, like, that he's right. Like, I really have started to look at games and trying to get games published from a publisher's perspective. Like, I feel like that's the blessing and the curse, right, of losing kind of, like, the naivete of being a new designer and not knowing what you're doing. And then, you know, kind of feeling like you understand and think, all right, well, these are the rules, so I should play by these rules. And he's right. We should say, screw the rules. We should say, bleep the rules and just throw them away.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you say it, I will have to bleep it. But you don't have to. Go on, though. Sorry.
I was just trying to make it easier for you.
I appreciate that.
So no problem.
Yeah.
I mean, if we have to say, f*** the rules, then we say, f*** the rules.
All right. That's what I was hoping
anyways,
for. Go on.
Seriously, though, you better bleep that. It's not even cool.
Of course.
But anyways, you know, it's just he's right. And it made me sad to realize that I was like, it kind of makes me feel like I'm jaded.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes conversations I have with other designers, like not on the show and in private, I kind of feel like I'm jaded about some of the stuff. So thanks, Andy, for the kick in the pants.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's talk about that. Let's talk about designing your own freaking game the way you want to. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So advice, I guess we're giving advice now. Design the game you want to design, right? I mean, don't even think about, just ignore feasibility in your first draft. And, you know, I think there was a time when we probably said that before, and then we stopped saying that. At least I stopped saying that. I don't know. I feel very disillusioned with myself now.
Well, you are kind of a bummer, but no, it's an important lesson for us to remember. And we've, and it's hard to do. It's hard to, take your own advice, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that, you know, one of my favorite pitches I've done in a while, as stupid as it was my pitch from the last episode.
Yeah,
which was a total joke pitch. Yeah, yeah, which was a total joke, but people have responded extremely positively too.
Yeah, well, because it's so far out there, right? It's completely far out. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, so can you just picture a miniature of a halfling wearing two
chickens strapped to his feet?
I mean, dude.
Oh yeah, dude.
I want that miniature like so bad. I want that miniature.
Yeah. Yeah, well, maybe some listener out there can do that in some kind of 3D software and have it 3D printed for you, just for you personally.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I'd be willing to pay upwards of $5 to see that.
Whoa, $5.
Maybe 10 bucks.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to have to paint it, though, then.
Sculpt it out of Sculpey polymer clay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a way to go.
I couldn't do that.
No, I'm not a good sculptor.
Me either.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, I think that I think we just need to remind the listeners and ourselves mm-hmm. That first draft really should be just completely pie in the sky. Do what you want, you know?
So what are some of our more outrageous ideas that we've had in the past? Like, obviously my human sacrifice game is pretty far out, and you gave me a lot of crap for that. Way, way back in the old days, I did a dice game pitch about chopping your fingers off in shop class.
I told you that I always thought that was a cool game. But see, that theme is crazy, but the game is not completely non-feasible or whatever, unfeasible.
It's been so long, I don't remember what my mechanics were there.
You had like 10 dice in the game. That was it. Like, that's not a hard game to
make.
It
was all custom dice. So that was...
Yeah, 10 custom dice, though. I mean, it's not that terrible.
Yeah.
See?
And cards.
See, now you're doing it.
What about, I'm just trying to think of some of our crazier ideas. You have boring ideas, Jason.
No, I've had some pretty crazy ideas over the time. I just don't remember what they are now because we've become lame.
Well, you have.
Well, I mean, I said,
I'm still advocating for human sacrifice.
Well, my racing game was pretty far out.
That was pretty far. Yeah. Grandma's goat was pretty wild.
Grandma's goat was pretty wild. And that was Grandma's goat. And that still is one that I've tried to pursue multiple times. I just have never been able to quite make it work.
Yeah. I can't quite crack it.
Which is too bad because, you know, one of the original games I had an idea for was my Wilderness Frontier Town game.
Yeah.
Where and it was just a massive game with so many tiles. Because the idea was that you had your little town tiles, right? And they were all two-sided. Mm-hmm. One side was an empty lot and the other side was the building. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, sorry. One side was the building. One side was an upgraded version of the building.
Okay.
But then there were all these dual-sided tiles that one side was foresty with some resource stuff on it. And the other side was an empty lot.
Yeah.
As you were deforesting the land, trying to build your town up, you were, of course, pushing resources farther and farther away.
Yeah.
Because the tiles were better if they were surrounded by other forest tiles.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a game that I thought was really cool, and I wanted it to be big and epic. It was one of my third or fourth game pitches, I think. It was somewhere in the beginning.
It was pretty early, yeah.
And that was when I gave up on because it just seemed too big. And, you know, I think the problem I have is the bigger games sometimes for me, they sound cool in the beginning, but then they just become harder nuts to crack, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
I mean,
yeah.
Simple games, though it's funny because I think a simple, elegant game is a lot harder to design than a big, mm-hmm. clunky game. But
feels more approachable.
It does, yeah. Even if it's not. I think part of that, and this is what Andy's talking about later in the game too, is when you're designing, is the prototype, that huge prototype. I just want to punch stuff when I'm making a huge prototype like that. You know what I mean? It's just so terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you're making a simple game, the prototype, I can remake a prototype 4 times and use 12 sheets of paper. It's not a big deal. But you know, to redo a huge prototype, you're just like, oh,
mm-hmm.
Sandbox Showdown was one where I always would get frustrated remaking prototypes with that because there are so many pieces to it to make prototypes for that. It's just what a pain. So
it's tough.
Yeah. That's tough right there.
Yeah. So now, to defend you a little bit, we were talking about that in the context of Game Crafter Contest, and so we knew that it would have to be the kind of thing that was limitable to Game Crafter style components,
right?
And what they could print. So, I mean, that had to be in our heads because of the boundaries of the brainstorming.
Right.
You
know? That's true.
So, you know, nevertheless, man, I don't know. So I guess what we're talking about is it's kind of more try and think like a first time designer. Sometimes yeah. it's beneficial to remember to not get wrapped up in designer brain and just kind of let yourself be loose and creative.
Yeah. Especially for that first draft, like that, when you're just doing those first ideas, yeah. just go wild, throw in tons of minis and components and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't be afraid of that. Don't be afraid of that. I mean, if you don't like it, you don't like it. If you don't want to do it, then don't do it. But I mean, don't be afraid of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. I don't know. I feel like we're punishing ourselves.
For what?
Well, mainly you.
It's not the first time.
I don't know. Do we lose our way on this topic?
I mean, it happens sometimes.
Yeah, it does.
We talked about stuff, though.
We did.
And that's what the listeners like when we talk about stuff.
Yeah.
It sound almost like we know what we're talking about, but not quite.
Not quite, but close.
There's something we've never lost, listeners. The ability to not really know what we're talking about, yet still talk for a while about it.
Yeah, we've been criticized for that, too. We've been criticized about a lot of things.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, rightfully so. Listeners, be critical of us.
I don't think they need advice on that. I think they've got that covered.
But
that's okay, though. I don't mind. I mean, like, honestly, yeah. I never mind when we get negative feedback or feedback are like, dudes, what are you doing?
Yeah, no, me neither.
That always it's makes important. Me happy.
It's important.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we need to embrace all feedback, especially the negative feedback.
Right.
Yeah. Not that, the constructive feedback.
Yeah, there. I just want to hug it. I just want to hug it.
Hug it.
Just cuddle it.
Hug the crap out of it.
Yep.
Yeah. Nuzzle it.
Just hug it out.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe you should just pitch a game.
I guess
we
so.
Completely lose our way.
Yeah. All right. So Thanksgiving is coming up. Did you know that?
I did.
Yeah. In a couple of weeks. Yeah. Crazy, right? I mean, Thanksgiving just came out of nowhere. So last year I pitched a Christmas game. You remember that? Remember my Christmas game?
Yes.
Yes.
About shopping and putting stuff in your mom's cart.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I remember that being kind of a fun, silly idea. So I thought maybe I could do a Thanksgiving-themed game this year. And I was actually talking with our friend Laura, with whom I co-designed Finish It, the Outrageous Storytelling Party Game, which coincidentally is on GameCrafter right now. It's available for sale. You can get your own copy for $25.99 on thegamecrafter.com. We need to set up a link on the website. Don't forget to do that, web guy. You listening to me?
Yeah, you want to set up a link on the website?
Yeah.
Send me some pictures.
Okay.
I mean, I could just pull them off
GameCraft. Yeah, right. I mean, that'd be easier.
How about you just remind me to
okay.
do it?
Yeah, it'll be good. Because I just forgot until just now.
Tomorrow, at some point, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so Laura and I were talking on lunch, and I needed to do a game pitch. And I said, gosh, I'd really like to do something Thanksgiving themed. And so, and I was thinking about turkey stuff, you know, like the turkey trying to escape the farm before he gets killed, or the turkey taking revenge on the farmer, or I don't know.
Right.
I even had it in my head, what if on the table you had a big, like, plush turkey that you had to stick your hand inside to draw, pull out things out of, or maybe you had to stuff things into the turkey, which I think still is kind of a funny idea if we're thinking crazy component wise.
I think that's hilarious.
So I might still come back to that idea. But Laura said, what about pilgrims? And what if it was something more about pilgrims and like the Pilgrim Society? And I said, okay, you know, I'm okay with that.
The Pilgrim Posse.
Pilgrim Posse, yeah. That's not bad. But no, that wouldn't work for this. And so let me ask you a question, Jason.
Okay.
Okay. You ready for this, Jason?
Yeah.
All right. When you picture a pilgrim,
mm-hmm.
what do you see when you picture a pilgrim?
Belt buckle on your hat.
There you go.
Was that what you wanted me to say?
Yes. Okay. Cause awesome. That's what everyone thinks about when they look at a pilgrim. I think yeah. buckles, right?
Yeah.
Buckles freaking everywhere.
Yeah.
Buckles on the hat, on the shoes, on the belt, on the jacket, buckles everywhere, right?
Yeah.
It's all about the buckles. Okay, so the game is called Plymouth Rock Clothiers.
Okay,
so the players are tailors, and the pilgrims are gearing up for their first Thanksgiving ever, right? The first Thanksgiving,
right.
And all the natives are coming,
and they don't have any buckles,
and they don't have any nice clothes to wear, And man, do pilgrims love buckles, because they love buckles, man. So you are tailors, and there are a bunch of orders that have come in to the Jamestown colony there. And there's only a few tailors in town, and they all want to compete for the business. Okay, so there's a pool of orders, and you just got to make whatever you can. And the more buckles you can put on those freaking clothes, the better they are, because buckles, man. All right. Buckles. But the thing is, you don't have buckles, you know? Tailors don't make buckles. This is freaking 1600s, right?
Right.
Like 1690, I want to say.
Right.
I think that's when the Plymouth Rock inscription is.
They don't have a 3D printer.
They don't have 3D printers. They don't have mass-produced buckles from China. The blacksmith has to freaking make some buckles, man.
I bet, though, he's really good at making buckles.
Oh, yeah, he's good. He's good.
I bet when they sent him over, they were like, number one qualification, how many buckles can you make?
Right.
Can you shoe horses? Doesn't matter. Make more buckles.
Buckles, dude. Right. So, but he's still a man, right?
Do they actually wear buckles?
Who cares? That's not important. That's not important. What matters is popular culture here, and what our popular image of...
Vikings with horns on their helmets.
Yes, exactly. Same deal. Exact same deal. All right. So the blacksmith can only make so many buckles. So here's the idea. This is a card game. There is a stack of buckle cards, all right?
You only hear that in this game.
Stack of buckles. There's a pile of orders, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's actually three different kinds of orders. There's hats, shoes, and clothes. You know, hats would be pilgrim hats and bonnets. Shoes would be boots, slippers, whatever. More buckles, the better.
Bonnets and buckles.
Yeah. Well, the more, the better, man. And then clothes is shirts, jackets, pants, dresses. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right. So you have those order cards, and those are there's a stack of each type. Hat, clothes, shoes. Okay. There's a stack of, and whatever's on top of those is available to make. That's the next order up. Okay. And then there's a stack of material cards, materials decks. Mm-hmm. All right. And that's shuffled and placed face down. Okay. Now, what you're doing here is you are, as the tailor, you're trying to collect materials, and you are going to play materials cards down on the table to complete an order. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to pick up that order card, and you're going to put it down in front of you. That's what you're going to use for points at the end of the game. Okay. The materials deck, say at the start of the game, everyone gets one material card, and then on your turn, you draw two. So you're going to start your game with three in your hand. On every turn, you're going to draw two cards in your materials cards in your hand.
Right.
And the materials that you might need to make clothes are fabric, a needle and thread, and leather. Okay? Real simple, just three options.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But also in those material cards are other Thanksgiving-related things, like a cornucopia and maize. cranberry sauce, a turkey. I don't know if there was cranberry sauce at the first Thanksgiving. Dude, I don't care. Not important.
Might as well be there.
Okay. There's a turkey. There's native visitors. Okay. What I made a list here of ideas. Pumpkins. Whatever. Okay. I don't need to go on. So the main material cards, the fabric, the needle, the thread, and leather, those are good for nothing but making clothes. Everything else, though, is some kind of a card effect, you know, draw another card, or that guy needs to discard a card, reducing the cost of something, whatever. Okay.
Right.
But those other cards are also worth some value in gold. Okay. And the only way you can get buckles is by spending that gold to buy buckles.
Okay.
Okay. Now, when you are making a pair of clothes, filling an order, you got to put down the materials that you need to make that. Okay. And then you also, if you're going to put buckles on that clothes, on that piece of clothing, you need to put the buckles down right away, because you got to make it and deliver it to the customer. Okay.
Right.
So you got to put the buckles on right at that time. You can put as many buckles on there as you want. Okay. As many as you want, as many as you can afford, but you have to have bought them in advance,
right?
You know, so that you can play them at the same time. You can't add buckles later, unless maybe a card lets you do that. Okay. Now, the thing about buckles is that they're score multipliers. If you have one buckle, that order, which might be worth 5 on its own, one buckle is times 2, so it becomes worth 10.
Yep.
If you have two buckles on it, then that's 2, 2, 4. Okay. 3 buckles is 6. 4 buckles is 8. So it's a score multiplier.
So if you could just make one outfit and put like 12 buckles on it.
Now, here's the thing. There's a limit. When you buy a buckle, it goes in your hand.
Right. Okay?
And it contributes to your hand limit. You're only allowed 7 cards in your hand at a time.
Okay.
All right? Unless you have a card, maybe you can put something out. A cornucopia maybe allows you to have a bigger hand size. Okay? So and that's the idea. Now, on your turn, because the blacksmith can only make so many buckles so fast. So on your turn, you have to turn over a buckle card face up from the buckle mm-hmm. stack. From the buckle stack. Buckle deck. At the start of your turn, before you draw your two cards, you have to put a basically make a buckle available for sale. All right. Buckles cost 10 gold.
Okay.
Okay. If I don't buy that buckle, it's still available for sale when it goes to the next player. That player puts a second buckle out. Now there's two buckles for sale. Hey, buy in bulk, it's cheaper. So instead of each of those being worth 10 gold or being costing 10 gold, you can now get each of them for 8. But you only get the discount if you buy two.
Right.
If you put a third, if there's a third one out there, they each cost 6, but only if you buy all three.
Right.
You know?
How low does that get?
It goes down to 4, because you can never have more than 4 surplus buckles at a time.
Okay.
All right.
But I mean, at 4, I don't know why somebody wouldn't just snatch those buckles up.
Yeah, if you have 16 gold to spend, it's a no-brainer. Buckles. You know. Yeah. But then again, that's 4 extra cards in your hand that you might get stuck with if you can't,
right.
If you can't fill an order. So on your turn, you have, you know, you turn over the buckle, you draw 2 cards to your hand. If you're over your hand limit, you discard at the end of the turn. Okay, you can fill an order. Okay, that's one action. You can play a card to have some effect on the table. Okay, or you can buy a buckle. So those are your 3 action options. At the end of your turn, you can discard. I'm thinking you can discard whatever you want at the end of your turn if you want to. That doesn't matter. But it doesn't mean you get to draw back up or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah. So, so the game ends when all the order cards are filled.
Okay. Makes sense.
So not when you run out of buckles. If you run out of main materials cards, you just shuffle and redraw, you know? So when all the orders are filled, that's when the game ends. And then for scaling however number of players, you just put a certain number of orders out there, and that allows the game end at different times. So there you go. The Plymouth Rock Clothing Company. Plymouth Rock Clothiers.
Yeah.
Is what I liked.
That game sounds like fun.
Yeah. I like that little economy there with the buckles, right? Yeah.
The only thing that would make the game more fun is if you had like a drawing of a Native American mm-hmm. and you could like put pieces of clothes on him and add buckles to those. But I don't know how that'd work in.
Well,
it wouldn't actually fit, but it would look really cool. In fact, that could just be the cover of the game. A nice Native American family
uh-huh.
with a bunch of buckles on them.
But the Indians didn't wear buckles.
But they want to make clothes for them. I thought that's who they're making clothes for.
No, it's making for the pilgrims. They're making the clothes for the pilgrims so they look nice and they can impress the natives when they're coming to dinner.
I thought you said the natives were coming in.
Well, the natives are coming to dinner and all the pilgrims want to look nice.
They were dressing up natives as pilgrims.
No. That'd be kind of funny. The pilgrims wear the buckles. Nice, okay. Shiny brass buckles.
I get you.
Yeah. That's cool. The idea.
Go pilgrims.
Plymouth Rock Clothiers.
I like it.
Yeah.
I would try that.
Okay. There you go. I'll probably never make that, but I think it's a funny idea.
It might be for the best.
I think it's a funny idea.
So a couple emails here.
Okay.
First, we got one from Kevin Yude, who just wanted to let us know he got Castle Dice and was thankful.
Cool.
He said his 2-year-old son, Otto, thought it was pretty cool and was excited because he thought it was a game, because whenever a box is of the certain size, he's like, is that a game? Which I understand. My son's the same way. Got an email here from Chris Schock. Hope I'm pronouncing that right, Chris. Howdy, guys. Love the show. Hey, thanks. I was hoping you could help me out. I have an idea that I keep needing help fleshing out. The idea is for a game about a summer camp where you place your camper in spots to do activities. The game also has a time element where different activities take different amounts of time, and activities are only available at certain times of the day or week. I really like this idea a lot, but I don't know what to do with it. What is the objective and how is it measured? What is the end game trigger? Is this a mundane summer camp? Or do I add a more fantastical element like zombies, aliens, or axe murderers? I greatly appreciate your thoughts you have, whether it's via email or on the show. As I was reading that, I was like, I really hope he's okay with us reading his game idea on the show. So I'm glad he ended with that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris. My first piece of advice would be go back and look at our old episodes.
Yeah.
I have that summer camp game I worked
on. Yeah, you do.
And some of that has some nice similarities to that, like mm-hmm. The time management thing and stuff. That was in a really early episode.
I don't even remember what that was called.
I think it was the pitch was called Camp Troublemaker.
Oh, yeah. Because you were trying to prank all the other students.
Yeah. So go back and look at that. I think you might be able to find some ideas you could lift out of there. I would say don't do zombies. But it's kind of funny. Like, it would be funny if it was in summer camp for kids in a horror movie. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think there's a couple of games out there that kind of tread on that ground a little bit.
Okay.
Something was on Kickstarter 6 or 8 months ago, was similar to that, about trying to avoid the serial killer at the camp.
Okay, maybe don't do that then.
Yeah, I don't recall the details. I mean, you could go goofy with it and just do all that, you know. Oh no, aliens came. Oh no, there's a serial killer. Oh no, there's zombies. Oh no, it's Parents' Day.
You could have you could really have all the stuff, and that might be funny. Like, mm-hmm. It's a summer camp.
It's just the craziest summer camp ever.
Yeah.
You know?
All the bad stuff happens.
Yeah. Boy, that's a big question. He's basically saying, I have a theme and some mechanics that I want. Help me make a game out of that.
Well, I think he's looking for some direction theme-wise.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, I mean, that would be, I kind of like the idea of going with everything. Just throw it all in there and see what sticks. It's kind of like an Island of Misfit Toys summer camp. Just get all the crazy stuff worked in there. That might be kind of fun, actually.
Yeah.
I'll do something crazy with that.
Yeah, I wonder... do you want to, maybe you want to add some building into it too? Maybe adding new cabins to attract more campers. You know, you could make that a whole resource management expansion kind of thing, where you start with a real simple summer camp and you want to build it up in this huge, sprawling mega camp. That might be directionally a little too complicated though. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the best I got.
Yeah.
So hopefully that helps a little. Like I said, I really would suggest going back and listening to that episode.
I think so.
Well, the episode title will reference some sort of camping thing, mm-hmm. or something, or yeah.
Something like that.
You'll see it.
Should be something about camping.
Yeah. And if it looks close, look at the show notes and it'll tell you if I pitch that one. So, cool. Well, we've got a couple of voicemails. We'll save those for the next episode.
Okay. Did you have another voice or another email?
No.
Nope. We got a couple of tweets here.
Sure.
One from Nick Shaw. He says, if you're designing a game with 3D components, what are the pros, cons, pitfalls?
Pros, sell mm-hmm. more copies.
Yep.
Cons, cost more money.
Yeah.
Those are the two simplest ones I can think of. Like, you know, and obviously your review process is going to be longer. You know, just talking, we talked to Phil Kilcrease from Fifth Street with some of the issues he'd had working on Smash Monster Rampage, because there were like die cuts that were sometimes funny and stuff, you know, and you had to make sure you double check those.
Right. Because he's got all those big chipboard 3D buildings
That's the same type of thing, you know?
Right.
So, like, you know, I have to imagine the review process is a lot harder with that. If you're publishing that, like, you really got to watch that. You know, I would say that it might scare some publishers away, but honestly, like, it's kind of become a thing now. Like, publishers are looking for more stuff that, you know what I mean? That is bigger like that, you know, like that's kind of a thing now. So,
You know, and that could be tough just for prototyping even, you know, just making a prototype with big three-dimensional components could be tricky.
That would probably be the hardest part, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and you say, oh, well, you know, I want to build a game around this cool thing that I already have. Well, that's cool. So you've got your prototype piece ready to go, but then think about what if you're trying to pitch that to a publisher to buy. You know, that publisher's not going to want to buy a game that's built around some piece of plastic toy that some other manufacturer already owns and created and everything.
That is a good point.
You know, so
you shouldn't let that hold you back.
No, but you know, you want to be realistic about stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I would say if you're going to do something 3D, make something that's your own creation. If you're going to show it to a publisher.
Yeah. And 3D printing is great. I mean, there's a lot of potential there for that. That doesn't necessarily mean it translates into, you know, something that's easily manufactured.
Right. I mean, that would be something to consider, but I mean, the publisher could figure that out too if they really liked your game.
Bo Severson tweeted out in regards to the last episode. He said, "Hey, Jason, another great episode. Managed to make fun of Formula D while not talking about Formula D."
I'm a master. I know.
And Hanbo, who we met Han at Grand Con this year, and I think we neglected to say that. So, Han, it was a pleasure to meet you. He says, "Anything new about Beavers Be Damned?" Jason?
No. All right. I haven't done anything with it. I know you haven't.
Nope.
So. We also got a tweet from a Strangeland Game. After this week's podcast, I was inspired to quickly sketch some box art for the new project that Jason's doing, which, Rob, as you can see here, is called Halfling Track. Right on the front there, you can see the halfling with the...
And he's got chickens on his feet
for roller skates.
But he's also like... It looks like he's ice skating position. Oh, and there's another one on a... Is that on a cow? Or is that
a bull or something?
It's a bull. Yeah.
I'm not sure. Boar, maybe. Could be a pig.
Maybe. Oh, and there's one where riding an emu or an ostrich in the background.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is sweet. Man, nobody ever draws pictures of my game ideas.
It's true. Somebody draw a picture of Rob's game idea.
No, well, nobody wants to draw a picture of human sacrifice.
Let's hope they don't. All right. Well, okay. On that note.
Yeah, so we'll get that picture in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to do my best.
Yeah. Don't forget.
I probably will.
I guess that's it, huh?
Yeah.
I have no idea how long this episode is because we don't have a time track on this new software. Let's
we'll
see if we can fix
out.
That for the next one, huh?
Yeah. All right.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the show. We appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastBTG. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I am @poorly_designed. And you can like us on Facebook. You can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And don't forget to call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. We listen to those. Well, Jason does, and if there's any that are good, he makes me listen to them. yeah, come on back next week. Oh, don't forget about Something from Nothing, bi-weekly video show, Sunday, every other Sunday night with Jason and Chevy and TC. It's a good time. Get your copy of Water Balloon Washout by going to our website, buildinggamepodcast.com. Through there, you can also link to my games that are on the Game Crafter, like Finish It, the outrageous storytelling party game. It's a great one. It's a lot of fun. You can also get the Rumplebum Academy for bug-based baking and Epic Monster Tea Party. Pretty soon, you're going to be able to see the Human Sacrifice game. You're going to get to see the Thanksgiving game.
And good night.
Good night.
Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Can you sing Ooga Shaka?
Ooga Shaka. Ooga Shaka. I can't stop this feeling. This inside of me. Girl, you just don't really like what you do to me. When they hold me. And the arms of church will make me. I feel that I am a little bit in love with me. This week, this candy, this is just too much. It got me frustrated for another couple of while.